David Rocha, Corian Capital. We're looking back at June. It's only a couple of days, working days, since the month end. And everywhere I look at the headlines, it's disaster stuff. Is it that bad? Was June really almost a historically bad month?
I think it was a very bad month. But I think if you put it in the context from the year, I think it highlights what a tough month it's been. World equities are down 18% year to date. That's the worst start of the year in 20 years, since 2002. The bond market, which is, you know, given that it's supposed to be a lot more volatility, if you look at the US aggregate bond market, that's down 11%. That's the worst start to a year in history. And, you know, the proverbial cryptocurrency that everyone was really shouting and saying was a buy, Bitcoin, was down 58%. So, yes, if you were an investor, it was a very, very tough 6 months.
When we spoke last month, looking at May, the S&P 500 had its worst first 5 months since 1939. Now we have the worst 6 months since 1970, and it's like level pegging with 1970 at 21%. So is it getting better?
Well, we certainly think that you know, the question is this the bottom, so to speak? Up until last month, we were largely underweight equities, specifically underweight the US. You know, being out the market, we think, is actually much more risky than being in the market. As an investor, you generally get compensated for volatility. You've got to endure volatility. A month ago, a quarter ago, et cetera, valuations were still quite high. Now they seem more normalized. Obviously, it depends what earnings is going to do. But at these valuations, we are starting to believe that it's probably more risk to be out the market than in the market. So we've actually closed our underweight position to more neutral. We're not sure if it is the bottom. No one rings the bell, but we feel that we're closer to it.
Just explain that. It's more of a risk to be out the market, in other words, not to be invested, than it is to be invested. Does this mean that sometimes market movements can just run away from you if you're sitting on the sidelines?
Yes, I mean, you go virtually across all geographies, markets, etc., you generally get compensated for the more volatility you get. So if you're taking equities as being the market, you know, over time you get compensated and you get a real return of approximately 5% for being in that investment. If you know that long-term trend is up, you know, being out the market, you're going against a long-term trend. So you've got to be a lot more sure of yourself to make sure you don't miss on that 5, 10, 15% rally, which can happen in a month. You know, you're going against something that over the fullness of time, you know, is going up. So make sure that you have high levels of convictions to be away from the market.
That's interestingly well put in that way, because if you're thinking of something that is going to rise over the long term, although it's going to be bouncing all over the place in between, to get those bounces right is not easy.
Correct. I heard someone once, a fund manager, when we were interviewing, say, you know, if you want me to beat inflation, just give it to me and don't ask any questions, and I'll put in equities and I'll come back in 10 years and I guarantee you that, you know, there's a very high probability that I'll beat inflation. But the psyche of your investors and their short-term needs always, you know, comes probably at the detriment of what's best for the long term, because it is difficult for clients to endure a drawdown to look at their valuations. It's, you know, they've got financial needs and they look at that on a much more shorter time frame. I understand it, but it doesn't mean it will work in a better long-term investment outcome.
All right. Looking at history now, we've had this terrible first half of the year relative to most other years, excepting, well, virtually every year going back to 1970. And then before that, as you said, last month back to 1939. What happens after these kind of wipeouts? Is there usually a strong rebound?
Every time is a bit different. But I read an article that this is probably similar to 1962, where you had high inflation and rising interest rates. In that case, you know, if you invested off the first 6 months, you had a rebound of about 15%. You still ended the year negative. But generally, when markets come down a lot, it has been historically more cases than not a good time to invest. So back to, you know, when valuations are looking more appealing, almost come to this world like you've come from Mars. For, you know, don't look at what happened over the last 6 months. Play the ball as you see it. Okay, long-term valuations are fair. And go ahead and invest when you think you're buying assets at the right price.
David, the Corian report looks at all of the fund managers, at the flows, inflows, outflows. I was looking at that as well. I'm a bit surprised, for instance, Ford Equity did one of the best performances for the month, yet it's amongst those who lost the most assets over the past year. So it's very hard to answer this question that I'm going to ask you now. But have private investors been panicking this time around? They've been exposed to a decline in the markets. Is there any indication, as you see it, that private investors have been cashing in their chips?
Unfortunately, I think they always tend to buy at highs and sell at lows. I mean, if you look at a year ago, everyone was talking about technology. You had to be in the US. I didn't go to a dinner table and have to explain why Corian was underweight US or didn't believe in Bitcoin. So I think, you know, what doesn't change in markets is behavioral science and euphoria and greed and fear. And I think this time is no different. So the fact that some of the asset classes has fallen 40%. I'm not going to the same dinner conversations and people say, gee whiz, we've got a 40% discount to when last I spoke to you. They actually are talking about something different. And that's just a little small personal experience that I have that I think is probably reflective of the broader market.
It's a bit like the horse racing industry. When people talk about their gambling, they always tell you about the winners and never about the losers. And of course, we know in real life, losers tend to outscore the winners, certainly when you're gambling. But what about that big story of reaching the position of capitulation with the whole Dow theory, for instance? You get the six waves, and the sixth wave is capitulation. That was everybody says, I don't want to touch shares again. That's the time to start buying. Are we seeing any capitulation?
I'm not sure. It's a very good question. I don't think I have the answer for that. Maybe from our side, we probably thought the market went ahead too far. And, you know, so it's in bear market territory. It's at 20% from its peaks. We think, you know, capitulation is a term that you get, you know, closer when PEs are at like close to single digits. You know, PEs on the S&P 500 is about 16, 17. That's not capitulation, I don't think, at the moment. And if you look at Bitcoin, you can say, okay, Bitcoin's down 58% year to date, but it's still up 600% over 5 years. So I still think capitulation is probably a strong word at this moment, but you are seeing a little bit of selling and worry out there in the market.
So on balance, if you're saying that the valuations are getting to a point where you're nibbling again and you're getting back to fully normal balanced position, are you saying then you don't think there's going to be another massive sell-off which would take us to that level of capitulation?
I think the risks to that are getting lower. You know, you can never say for certain. I think that the drawdown of a 20% is material. If it goes down another 5, 10, 15% from here, it may. But I think you're starting to get to levels where you've got some protection. The big caveat and worry, and I think the big worry of most managers, fund managers I speak to, is what happens with earnings over the next reporting period, because valuations have come down, but they're based on earnings expectations. Now, those earnings expectations are too high. Well, then I think the baby goes out to the bathwater. That's the big risk out there. So at these valuations, we feel comfortable, but we do know that the risk there is the next earnings cycle.
Now, there are all kinds of different inputs in this very complex world that makes up a market. You think about what's happening in China at the moment, for instance. You could make a compelling argument to say they're coming out of their COVID-19 issues. The supply chain problems are going to be passed. That will affect inflation. That means interest rates, and so on and so on. So I suppose it's really a case of we're looking at a market now where people will just throw the dice and take their own views.
I think that's why it's called a market. You have, you know, buyers and sellers with many different views out there on what they're willing to trade a security at. So that's the fun of it. Investing for me and for my team is enjoyable, but it's a serious business because you are managing other people's assets and financial beings. So certainly a lot of views out there, but at the end of the day, you got to stick to your principles. And if you believe that you've got an investment process that works over time, try and just stick to those principles, because being too clever generally ends in tears.
What's the biggest worry, the biggest single concern that would be in a fund manager's or a money manager's mind right now?
I think if you asked me that question last month, we would have said inflation. I think the next worry, as I probably touched on a little bit earlier, is actually earnings. Valuations have come down. If earnings in the economy slows down to a worse level than is feared, and corporates have worse earnings in the next 12 months, I think that is the biggest fear. No longer really inflation. I think inflation is probably secondary to corporate earnings.
So we must keep our eyes wide open over the next month when the June quarterlies come out in the US.
100%. I think that's going to be the toll. If earnings come out within expectations, then I think investors, there'll be a potential rally. If they don't, well, then all bets off the table. I think the market could go down a little bit further.
David, I spoke with Piet Viljoen last week, who was very positive about South Africa and about the way, not, I would say, South African stocks, not South Africa, the economy. He doesn't think that suddenly we've started managing this economy properly. But he did say that because of valuations, because of interest rates, because of inflation, all those kind of issues, that South Africa, in his opinion, will outperform for some time into the future. What's your view on that?
I think Peter and Corin shared a similar view over the last few years. In fact, Corin actually put out a video depicting a boxer and SA Incorporated, knocked out but ready for the next fight, or not yet knocked out. We certainly shared a similar view. We were overweight South African assets significantly, and fortunately for our clients, they benefit from that view. But I think going forward, we probably think that, it's best to actually close that position. So we're probably not as bullish as Pete is as things stand, and I think there's a number of reasons why we've started to trim our overweight position. We're not underweight South Africa, and that is, on a relative performance, our data suggests that the relative valuations are not as attractive as they were 2 years ago, 1 year ago, 3 years ago, and also South Africa is to some extent a geared commodity play, and commodities are now starting to fall significantly from their peaks. So that, and also, we're all going to be mindful of the fact that we live in South Africa, and we really, less than 1% of the market cap of the world. So back to basic principles of diversification. So unless there's compelling reasons to be overweight South Africa, we think it's more sensible to be more diversified into other geographies, sectors, and risks that you can't really have in South Africa.
I was going through the detail of the Corin report, and it always has interesting aspects to it. But from your perspective, looking particularly at the funds, what stood out?
I think what stood out for us, if you look at the funds that had the worst 1-year returns for both the local and the global funds, you would see the names either technology and quality jumping out. We think the collapse of technology is well documented, but the collapse of quality as an investment strategy it was actually quite significant. And I think that's a great lesson to all investors. I think the lesson is, you know, no matter how good a company is, no matter what moats that they have, no matter what their return of equities have been over the previous years, if your starting price for what you pay for an asset is wrong, well, then a quality company could just as easily be a poor and inferior investment. So, you know, bottom line, price one pays matters, and quality wasn't a one-way bet.
David Bacher from Corient Capital, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.